This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So the city of Seattle may speed up environmental reviews for policies and projects that they happen to like. We're talking about upzoning in densely populated neighborhoods. We're talking about instituting more and more and more bike lanes that no one will actually use. At the same time, developers will have to go through lengthy and expensive reviews that end up costing them money that ends up getting passed on to you, the consumer. Now, the Seattle Times says council members Mike O'Brien and Abel Pacheco, and we like Abel Pacheco on this show, they've introduced legislation that would alter the process so they wouldn't have to do drawn-out environmental reviews that end up essentially slowing down these projects that they would argue we have a huge need to get done as quickly as humanly possible. But only on the projects that they personally like. We're talking about the unnecessary bike lanes over at the Burke-Gilman Trail in Ballard. We're talking about the low-income housing that they're going to put in at Fort Lawton. They say the reviews are used purposefully in some cases to slow down the process to go forward with these things. And you know what? They're 100% right. Sometimes people are abusing these, calling for these types of reviews, putting in a whole bunch of complaints to slow down the system. And I agree, something needs to be done. The difference is something needs to be done across the board, not just on the policies that Seattle politicians like. Because the exact same things are slowing down the private developers. And it's costing them money. And it's impacting you and me. Now, all this would do is give the city special treatment. And part of the reason why they want to get rid of these reviews is because then it sometimes gets rid of the important public meetings and the outreach that needs to happen. There was a statewide push, and we talked about it earlier on in the year. There was a statewide push to basically give Seattle specifically an exemption so they can put up tiny home villages and other homeless encampments that are sanctioned without having to go through the environmental review process, SEPA it's called. Now they did it, why? Because they wanted to bypass the community outreach. They didn't want to go into the neighborhoods and talk to people like me and you who are directly impacted. Instead, they just want to be able to impose their will with as little hurdles as humanly possible. You see, they know that the longer a process takes, what ends up happening is the more time we all have to organize and fight back. The longer it takes for a controversial project to actually get built, one that maybe no one really knows about yet, gives me more time to look into it and find out about it. Now, ultimately, in that statewide effort that was pushed by, I can't remember his name, it was a state, Joe Wynn. State representative in White Center, Democrat. Instead of actually pursuing that, they ended up having to drop it. They dropped it because, frankly, we asked you guys to make phone calls and send emails, and all of a sudden the pressure was so high that they had to give up on it. And so kudos to you guys. It shows you the power of the show. It shows you the power, frankly, of what you guys are capable of, but sometimes don't realize it. But understand what was behind it. Now, if they wanted to step up and say, you know what, we're going to do this for everybody, everyone gets treated equally, we're not going to get special treatment for city project, I'm in theory, I'd be on board, but something tells me that's not what they want to have happen. Now, Abel Pacheco, I believe, is going to be on the show either later this week or next week. We'll talk to him about it. I think he's a fair guy. I've liked what I've seen coming from. I may not agree with everything he does, but I certainly think he's a fair and honest person. So I look forward to that conversation with him. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So the FBI is warning students not to even think about a hoax threat. Don't even think about it, especially when you're at school. There's usually some kind of uptick in hoax crimes after shootings, and unfortunately, we've had some high-profile shootings nationally.
There are no nationwide statistics tracking hoax threats, but the FBI estimates that they are in the thousands per year.
So there's some concern that after those shootings, whether we're talking about in Texas, whether we're talking about in Ohio, students might say, oh, hey, I'm an idiot. Let me play a joke. Let me put out false information and pretend that this particular school is under threat. Why do kids do that? Because they're stupid. Steve Byrne is the FBI of Seattle public affairs officer, and he tells our sister station, Kyle Radio, that every single time they do that, all you're doing is draining resources.
Well, the FBI and its local partners investigate each threat, and these investigations can be costly. And like I just said, they take away resources from an actual potential crisis somewhere else.
Okay, when you say that you're just using resources, that really doesn't mean a lot to most people. You've got to get specific. So what exactly are we talking about? The exact type of resources that right now we're already low with?
Well, we have officers from local departments and agents, other professional staff and analysts looking into these things, doing different kinds of technical background or looking into who may have posted a threat or where it's coming from.
So in other words, when you do these hoax threats, what ends up happening is cops, many times, many cops will have to look into it. And we're already at a point in the city of Seattle, for example, where they don't even have enough staff members to go off priority calls, meaning they're only responding quickly to emergency calls. But some of the stuff that impacts all of our neighborhoods that bother us the most, the kinds of stuff like break-ins, whether a car or a house or maybe an alarm that's going off, they're not staffed to actually show up in a reasonable amount of time. It can sometimes take hours. So all that these hoaxes do is make that problem even worse. Now, at the same time, they're also saying, hey, you know, even if you think something's a hoax and you hear about it, you really, really, really need to call 911 and report it.
What we want to convey is that it's not up to the public to necessarily determine if the threat is real. Just report it. If they see something, they should say something. It's one of those classic scenarios, and let the law enforcement look into whether it's real, because they may be potentially stopping something from happening.
Totally. Now, when I see stories like this, and yes, there's certainly certain outliers when we're talking about it, my sense is much of this, any kind of hoax, is usually due to bad parenting or some kind of bad adult role models in these kids' lives. I hate my parents, but I'm my mother. I'm in my dad's past, so I'm not gonna do that yet. But I had a good upbringing. I knew what was right. I knew what was wrong. There was discipline. It wasn't physical, but there was discipline. And I never did stuff like this. And none of this kind of thing ever tends to happen. Not all. I'm speaking in generalities. But when you've got present parents, parents who are asking their kids about what they're doing, parents who are involved in their kids' lives, talking to them, hanging out with them, going for walks with them, spending quality time together with them, they're not the ones who are doing this. The kids who are doing this are the ones who don't have responsible adults in their life. So part of me doesn't necessarily blame the kid, even though ultimately, you know, if you're doing this when you're 16, 17 years old, you should know better. But again, 16 and 17 year old kids who don't have really, you know, who don't have the parents or adults in their life that they deserve, they end up doing stuff like this. I mean, think about just your own upbringing. 99.9% of the people who are listening to me right now would never, ever even think about doing something like this, because you had an adult in your life who would tell you as you were growing up what's right and what's wrong, the consequences of your actions. And so, of course, you know that. Now think about the kids who you went to high school with or even college with or whatever, who would pull stuff like this. Think carefully about them. Think about their background. Did they come from really close-knit homes? And I don't mean like having two parents in there. Like, that's not what I mean. Just a home that really cared about the kid. Probably not. Every single kid that I knew in high school who would pull not quite something like this, but do some of the sort of the shenanigans that kids would do at the time, they all came from households, at least in my experience, because I went to a small high school with a lot of celebrity kids, weirdly. The kids who would do this are the ones whose parents were kind of absent. It's not that these kids were bad, but they didn't have someone at home that they were going to who would be able to teach them right for wrong. And I think a lot of that is because in that case, it was driven by maybe the celebrity aspect to it, where they were busy going and doing other things and maybe they weren't spending the time with it. But that's really where it comes from.
Yeah, I mean, I see it. I see your point. I have never once been a parent, so I can't firsthand give this.
I was a parent one time.
One time?
And it was on The Sims. And unfortunately, not only did the kids run away, but all the pets died.
See, but the college thing that you went to, I've seen that. I've seen where that works. You know,
it came from bad families.
Yeah, the kids who were, you know, the hardest partiers there were usually the ones who didn't go home for very long on Christmas break. And
look, I feel bad for these kids. I absolutely feel bad. Whether we're talking about a college-age kid who just doesn't have a family unit to go back, a structure that's going to back them, or especially when we're talking about a high school, an elementary school kid, a middle schooler, like, you have to feel sorry for them. And so, you know, it's one of those cases, especially if you're out there and you know some of these kids, maybe your kids' friends are like this. Like, hey, maybe you should step up a little bit and be that adult role model, the responsible one that maybe that kid doesn't have. And sometimes it takes stories like this just to remind people of, like, the importance of family. Coming from someone who hates his family.
That was a beautiful Motivation Wednesday speech, Jason.
You hashtag that. You hashtag that. Motivate. Well, it should be on Monday, though.
Yeah, but we're a little late. Well, you had Monday off.
Okay, fine. Motivation Monday on Wednesday because we had Monday off. That's too wordy. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. Let's get you home the right way with Right Way Traffic.
In Tukwila, southbound 405, approaching South Center Boulevard, we have an accident reported, seeing a backup from the Valley Freeway to the scene. Traffic still struggling on westbound I-90 from 405, actually approaching 405, out across the water due to an earlier stalled vehicle inside the Mount Baker Tunnel that's now cleared of the roadway. You can use westbound 520, starting to thicken up, and there is a toll. Northbound 405, steady heavy leaving downtown Bellevue, heading into Kirkland from an earlier crash. You're listening to AM 770 KTTH.
Hey, did you know you can follow me on Instagram? Just pull up that app, search for the screen name Jason Rantz. It's all one word, JSONRANTZ. Hit the follow button, go behind the scenes of the show. I'll give you a little tour of the studio in a bit. But first, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Happening now.
School's back in session, and along with that comes growing concern over the nation's anti-Semitic BDS movement. Boycott, divest, sanction. And in a lot of cases, it's flourishing on college campuses, including right here in Washington State. Joining me to discuss the issue is Noah Phillips. He's a junior fellow with the News and Public Policy Group, Chaim Solomon Center, and he's a columnist over at the Daily Wire. Noah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So how does BDS manifest itself on a college campus?
You know, there are a lot of different ways, and one of the main ways is through student groups and student organizations, which pose as legitimate political groups, like the Students for Justice of Palestine, Jewish Voice for Peace, and If Not Now. And all these organizations are actually promoting a BDS ideology, which is severely damaging the discourse on these campuses.
Okay, tell us why, because there's some people who still don't necessarily believe that BDS is an anti-Semitic movement.
Yeah, well, the main way to understand how BDS is anti-Semitic is to look at who supports BDS. BDS is backed by the Iranian regime, by Hezbollah, by Hamas, by Islamic Jihad, by PFLP, a known terrorist organization responsible for hijackings and suicide bombings. And these are all organizations that subscribe and support monetarily and rhetorically the BDS movement. So when you have people like this supporting the BDS movement, it becomes very clear that BDS is no more than a mainstream terrorist ideology being pushed on American college campuses.
Well, and its core, I mean, it is the literal definition of anti-Semitism. BDS is a movement that exclusively blames Jews for problems in a region. And it's not so much that you and I will say Israel is never to blame in anything. We, I'm assuming, will look at some policies coming from the Israeli government and maybe have some qualms. But when you exclusively blame Israel, when you give a pass to a literal terrorist organization in Hamas, or pretend that they're not a terrorist organization at all, that's anti-Semitic.
That's absolutely right. And actually, the origin of BDS starts even before the State of Israel was created. The origin of BDS and the boycotts against Jews and Israelis originated with the Arab boycotts in 1948, when Arabs would boycott Jewish products altogether in the hopes of crippling a future State of Israel. And that's just what BDS is a couple decades later.
So how widespread is this on college campuses in this country?
It's on pretty well every college campus in some form or another. Depending on the college campus, it has varying success rates. For example, only on 130 campuses has BDS resolutions been proposed in student council. But on 68 of these campuses, has the resolution passed. And now in effect on these campuses is such a strong BDS presence and anti-Israel ideology and a withdrawal from purchasing Israeli product and investing in Israeli companies.
And we've seen that movement here in Washington State, whether it's Evergreen State College, where they were trying to get it so that products from Israeli companies wouldn't be sold on campus, or at the University of Washington, where you've got a lot of students who are claiming for a free Palestine. Palestine, of course, doesn't actually exist historically or otherwise. It's a political movement. Do you see it gaining traction nowadays on college campuses?
Yes, unfortunately. I was just up at Brandeis University, and on the front page of Brandeis' newspaper was a story about a behavior by a BDS group called It's Not Now. Not officially to stop the BDS, but a large proportion of their students and their activists are part of the BDS movement, in which the If Not Now organization defaced a piece of artwork from Hillel, a Jewish organization on campus, and faced little to no ramifications from the university. So when you're having behaviors like this going unpunished, BDS just runs rampant on these campuses, and it goes crazy on pretty well every campus that'll allow political discourse.
Well, there's sort of a non-discussed part of this, in that this has a significant impact on Jewish students. Now, I know, according to, you know, the progressive ideology, Jews are just a bunch of wealthy, privileged white people, but no, that's not the case. Take us through exactly what impact it does have on these students.
So an organization called the AMCHA Initiative has actually conducted a study on the effect of having BDS present on these campuses and having BDS resolutions passed. And what they found is between 6 and 8 times more anti-Semitism on campuses with a strong BDS presence. So that's the impact that BDS is having. It's not an impact on shaping the policies of Israel and shaping the political discourse on Israel on these campuses, but it's affecting Jewish life, and it's increasing harassment against Jews and verbal abuse against Jews, even physical abuse against Jews. That's the real impact of BDS on these campuses.
So we've been talking about it. We've been highlighting it. You're doing work over at the Daily Wire and also the Chaim Solomon Center. I'm doing work here at KTTH.com and on the radio. Now what? Outside of us highlighting it, what's sort of the next step?
Well, the next step primarily lies with college activists waking up to this reality of BDS as not a political movement but an anti-Semitic ideology, and turning over to organizations like Stand With Us and other organizations on campus like CAMRA, who are actually working to promote a healthy discourse about Israel and discussion about Israeli policies without refuting Israel's right to exist in an anti-Semitic manner. So these organizations are on campus for the explicit purpose of supporting a thriving discourse, whether it be pro-Israel or some detractors of Israel and Israeli policies on these campuses, and it's much healthier than having just the BDS rhetoric over and over and over slamming against Jews and Israelis to much. So joining these organizations as college activists is crucial to promoting the pro-Israel message on these campuses.
If you want to read Noah Phillips's piece, go to dailywire.com. It's up there right now. Noah Phillips is the junior fellow with the News and Public Policy Group, Chaim Solomon Center, and he's also a columnist with the Daily Wire. Noah, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So there's a lot of fear-mongering going on from the left, which is a very smart strategy, politically speaking, because it scares a lot of people into voting for you. Folks on the left do it. Folks on the right do it. Right now, a lot of folks on the left are doing it, and they're the ones who are running for president, coming from a movement that wants to pretend there are quote-unquote literal Nazis roaming around American cities, completely taking things over. And so then Bernie Sanders, with that in mind, goes on The View, and he speaks out against the danger of President Trump.
In my view, Donald Trump is the most dangerous president probably in the... And again, it gives me no joy to say this. He is a pathological liar.
It gives me no joy to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, and I'm going to say it with a little bit of a smile on my face and a little bit of a wink and a nod, because I understand that this is really, really fun to say, and I think it's going to win me an election.
Yeah. And when people ask me, you know, what do you think about what Trump said 5 minutes ago in a tweet, I say, I'm not going to say anything because 10 minutes from now he's going to change his view. I can't comment.
But also, my memory is not what it once was. And if I'm being totally honest with you, I haven't actually been on Twitter. I have an intern that takes care of it for me. He just says, sit down. There is some rap artist in front of you. I believe it was B. Cardi. Do you know who this is? The B and the Cardi? Do you know, intern?
I know who it is.
Who is it? Just tell me in my ear, because I'm not 100% sure.
The Cardi B.
Caudi B. Caudigan? Is that what... it's my understanding that Caudi is short for Caudigan. I hear that you're a really big fan of Caudigans. I guess you rap about it. They will film this conversation between us. We will post it on our Twitter feed, and then we will pretend that I'm really hip with what the kids are doing. But really, it's just an intern.
This is not the kind of temperament or personality that we should have in the White House,
absolutely,
in my view.
True.
So first of all, I think it's important to point out that my voice and his are almost indistinguishable.
You are good at
that. I'm really good at Bernie Sanders. But number two, this whole idea that Trump is the most dangerous president of all time. Right now, we're at a time that we've come closer than ever in our history, to getting North Korea under control. It's not an easy thing to do. There are certainly a lot of bumps, and there's a lot still to be accomplished. But we're closer now than we were under Obama, under Bush, under Clinton. We have pulled out of an incredibly dangerous nuclear deal with Iran that made this entire world more dangerous. We are at a space where we've got more peace than not. Okay? It's incredibly important to point that out. You can do whatever you want and say whatever you want about the dangers of President Trump. He's very dangerous. That's what I said. I know that's what you said. But the fact of the matter is, you don't have data to back that up. You can say you don't like him, right? You can argue with some of his policies. I do. But no, you do a little bit more than that. Like what? You literally just called him the most dangerous president in the history of the world. Well, he is. He is the most dangerous I have ever seen. And if you disagree with me, why don't you send me a text at 1-800-465-8770. And then we will send you a link to a latest Caudigan B rap. She does the rap, yes?
Very much so.
Thank you, intern. What is your name, intern what?
Intern...
Peyton?
C.
Intern C. Are you related to Caudigan B?
Yes.
It's very good. You should give me more tips because I want to be hip with the kids. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Saul Spady, our morning show host, all he wanted was a salmon eggs benedict at Glow's in Capitol Hill. But what he ended up getting was a healthy dose of ideological bigotry. He joins me in studio. Saul, turns out you got kicked out of a restaurant yesterday.
Honestly, actually, I wasn't even kicked out. I wasn't allowed entry. It would have actually been a little more fun, a little bit more of a scene if I had allowed to be sat, and then they like looked at my credit card and realized I was Saul Spady, and then kicked me out. Instead, as I was walking into Glow's, it's a hole in the wall in Capitol Hill, one of my favorite brunch places. I've been going there almost for the last decade, and the gentleman who was supposed to sit me down, the host/server, looked to me and goes, "Oh, are you Saul Spady?" And because I live in Seattle, I don't get excited when people recognize me. I want to run for the hills. And then immediately after that, he said, "You are not allowed to eat here because of your negative rhetoric against the homeless people in our community. Go." And yeah. I guess I could have had a Cuomo moment and had a fight, but that's not
call you Fredo, so you're fine.
Yeah, no, he just refused me service. Which...
What exactly did he say? Because I was wondering at the time, like, okay, was this some weird misunderstanding? Was he giving you a hard time? Was he joking? This was serious the entire time.
Oh, it was serious. And it was a very short encounter. It was about 25 to 30 seconds. He recognized me. I was wearing, I guess my family does own Dick's Drive-In, my Dick's Drive-In tank top. I was wearing a hat, and so I looked like myself. Mm-hmm. And so he just said, "Saul, I don't like the rhetoric that you put out around the homeless people in our community. It's dangerous, and you are not allowed to eat here."
So this has been independently confirmed. I spoke to, you spoke to as well, the owner of Glow's. They've come out, Julie Reisman came out. She's apologetic. She says that this was not her policy. This was someone who was acting on their own. They said they were going to look into how they're going to deal with this individual, and that's a personnel issue, so we don't expect to hear back. What did you want to have happen once you started thinking about this?
Well, I don't want to have the classic boycott happen. That I we are not those people, and that is not the type of show we've started to create, really, in your honor, 6 to 9 a.m. We've been trying to build bridges. We've been trying to create conversation. And so instead, I want to see if Julie is correct. I want to test her belief, and I'm challenging my listeners. If your listeners are engaged right now, I'll challenge them to be as polite as possible, to either call Glows and let them know they're looking forward to having breakfast, but on behalf of the Rational Opposition and the Saul Spady Show. So go in, try my salmon eggs Benedict. I get a side of avocado. I get bacon slices. I take off the egg. I put the bacon slices on. I add some aardvark hot sauce. And then I eat all of this and I don't wake up for 20 hours because it's extremely heavy. This is a comfort food. And all I can say is it's unbelievably troubling to try to go and have comfort food in these times when you are trying to take a day off from all the rhetoric and you're denied. Instead, you're just brought back into this really hellhole that we live in where we can't have honest conversations about the true problems that are happening.
So when you started to think about what had just happened, what, because you almost, I think, immediately sent me a note saying, oh my God, this just happened. Like, what was your thought process? What were you thinking? Because obviously, by the way, ideological discrimination in the city of Seattle is weirdly unconstitutional. It's illegal. And of all the places, the few places that have it, Seattle is one of them. But beyond that, how were you feeling?
One, I actually felt that no one would believe me. So I feel unbelievably lucky that the owner actually owned up to it.
Yeah.
And two, I have a friend who worked in the kitchen who kind of saw what happened, and he told the owner about that encounter. So that's one of the reasons why the owner got engaged. I'm lucky that I am so out there in the community that I have people that will actually defend me and give me a chance to make my point. I know you have that same experience. And then number two, I actually thought a little bit about all of my friends who I have a lot of friends who are different backgrounds, races, genders, colors. And I felt a little bit of empathy because I've actually never been rejected for service. No one's ever been like, you Jew, you're not allowed here. And that was a really shocking experience. And it made me feel for my friends who talk about racism and what they experience. And then the third one I realized is that all of those same friends are going to tell me, just welcome to the club, and no one's going to feel bad for me. It's like, really, it's probably just what I deserve, because I think differently.
If you want to read about Saul's adventures yesterday, you can text the keyword Spady, S-P-A-D-Y, to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword Spady to 1-800-465-8770. That's the number to tax resolution hotline. Don't just read it, but share it. Post this on your Twitter feed. Post it on your Facebook wall. Post it on your LinkedIn account. Email it to friends and family. It's important to shine a spotlight on this, because I take away from this the fact that they did own up to what ended up happening. They apologized for it. I say the more of a spotlight we can put on this story, the less likely it is to happen in the future.
Well, and let's be honest, Jason, this is not the type of story that goes viral. This is not the type
unless
of story.
Unless we try to make it viral.
And our listeners, but the national news, because we're not boycotting them, because I'm not crying foul, because I'm actually trying to engage a conversation, because my last goal is I just want more businesses to learn about the work that I've done alongside my family, alongside Mary's Place in family homelessness. We have No Child Sleeps Outside coming up. We're going to be calling other businesses to join with us to try to raise over $2 million for family homelessness. And if businesses like Glows, if businesses like Dick's Drive-Ins, if we all come together, step up, realize we might disagree, but on family homelessness we agree, we can take a moment like this that is truly disappointing, very sad, and turn it into something that's incredibly positive.
Well, I also know, like me, you're neurotic, and when something like this happens, you're going to go back and try to, like, what did I say that might have sort of triggered this person? What do you think he was referring to? Because I'm very familiar with your work on air, but also in the community. And I was like, I don't think he's all that controversial on homelessness.
It was farm jail. I guarantee it. So I wrote an article about how it seems like we are having people roll out of incarceration incredibly quickly. So you'll go to jail for 2-3 days, maybe a week, but we're not actually dealing with anyone's addiction. So what we actually need to do, and this was this article, is we should create a new type of jail that's incarceration, but it's not in a cell. Instead, you're on a farm, so it's much more open air. You'll have rehab, you'll have continuing education, and what we're going to try to create is, yes, incarceration that lasts 3 to 6 months, but its main goal is actually rehabilitation and rehab and actually helping you get your mind right instead of, let's say, just penalizing you for the mistake you made.
It's because, holistic.
Yeah, it's a holistic solution, and maybe that's not the solution, but let's be honest, what we're doing isn't working, and I don't actually think farm jail's that bad of an idea.
So it's, I suppose it's controversial to a crazy person who doesn't like to have any alternative viewpoints being expressed. And I don't necessarily know if I fully buy into this, but I like the idea and I think it's worthy of a conversation, especially if something similar is happening across the country around the globe.
Well, I got this one, Jason. My favorite brunch place is this place called Glow's. You want to go have some brunch, and we can have a conversation about farm jail with each other, and you can tell me maybe how you disagree with me, and we can see if we can come up with a better...
We're allowed to do that?
I mean, you're Jewish, but that's not the problem. You might have some conservative pushback. No, we're going to be fine.
Yeah, if you got kicked down, I'm screwed.
We're going to be fine. It's going to be great. I actually am thinking about doing this maybe monthly. I want to build bridges. That's what we're trying to do on the morning show. It was hard. Sometimes you want to have a fight, and the big thing to do is to actually back down and instead go back and have your salmon eggs Benedict that you've loved so much.
You and I, we're going to get to do that at some point, probably this week or next week. That's Saul Spady. Listen to him in the morning, every single morning. You are doing yourself a huge disservice by not waking up with Saul Spady. 6-9 right here on AM 770 KTH. And more importantly, right now, text the keyword Spady to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to his story to read, but to shine a spotlight. It's very, very important that we share this, because you know what? Saul's right. It's not going to be picked up nationally. It should, but it's not going to be. So let's try to get it out there as much as humanly possible. Text the keyword Spady, S-P-A-D-Y, to 1-800-465-8770. Saul, thanks for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. See you later.
Again, he'll be on tomorrow morning, 6-9 weekdays right here on AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. I am the first one to admit that the story, at least on the surface, of where in the world Seattle's traffic czar is, I totally admit that it's a little dry. But it's incredibly important because in the city of Seattle, as traffic is getting worse and worse and worse, as we are on what I'm told is chapter 3 of the Seattle squeeze, where you've got all of these different infrastructure changes, construction work being done in and around Seattle, traffic is getting worse. We have a dude who was hired to coordinate all of this. No one seems to know what it is he's doing now. He's still getting $195,000. He's still getting the wonderful perks that come along with working for the city of Seattle. His name is Mike Warden. He's a retired Air Force Major General. He's got a job called the Director of Mobility Operations Coordination, which is eerily similar to another person's job from Heather Marks, who's the Director of, I believe it's Mobility. We're not entirely sure how their jobs are different. All I know is we've got a guy who's making almost $200,000 and traffic is getting worse, and no one knows what it exactly is he's doing. They sent me a long press release. We talked about it briefly last night. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to the story so you can read the full press release. There's things in this press release outlining exactly what it is he does that I'm pretty sure was already done and or being done before he even got here. For example, they talk about an analysis of the 2015 fish truck incident resulted in 114 recommendations for process improvements, of which 30 recommendations are now in the process of being addressed by Director Warden. Well, first of all, that happened in 2015. It's 2019. It shouldn't take this long to put forward some changes. The biggest part of it, the incident response teams that he's overseeing, that was done last year. So what exactly do you do? It says, additionally, Mike rides buses, light rail, or the Sounder to talk to transit drivers and riders. Oh, that sounds like an efficient use of his time waiting for a bus to arrive. A bus that is perpetually late in the city? Got it. You're getting $200,000. You were the face of what I thought was supposed to be this massive movement to address the traffic concerns here. You're not really working. And beyond that, They're not doing any media availability. When you announce Michael Warden as this new director of blah, 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 they had a big press release. They had him speak. The mayor was there. She spoke. She was super pumped. They were talking all about what this department's going to do. Not only do we not get press releases from this guy even telling us what it is he's doing, he doesn't do interviews with the media. They turned us down. And you know what? That's okay. You don't have to do an interview with me. Do an interview literally with any other talk show host or journalist so they can have at least some scrutiny as to what it is you do. My sense is the reason why they won't let me talk with Mike Warden is because if I asked him, and by the way, he's an outsider. He came to the city for this job. He wouldn't have any clue how to get around the city of Seattle. I think I could ask him some very basic questions about driving in Seattle. He would have no idea how to answer it. And that's problematic. We have Chris Sullivan, who's on our sister station, Cairo Radio. He does all the traffic there. He's the purveyor of choke points. I was texting him yesterday, like, have you heard anything from Michael Warden? He sent me a text back. He was like, who? I'm like, how do you not know who this is? He's the director. He's the traffic czar. He goes, what? And then I started to tell him, because, oh, yeah, I remember that guy. That's alarming. And it's not Chris's fault. It's the city's fault. This is a major position. And it's making a lot of money. No clue what he does.
See, and we've been talking about this last few days, and my interest in this position has grown exponentially.
I want this job.
Yeah.
$200,000 to talk with bus drivers who, by the way, don't want to talk to you. And you're just making life much more difficult for them. They already are late. Now they got to deal with you breathing over their shoulder, asking them, so how do you like your job?
Is that what you do when you're on the bus?
No, I try to go away from as many people as humanly possible. There was a woman on the bus the other day who, this is funny, because I was never been more uncomfortable. So I'm on the bus, and I'm sitting about two rows behind this woman who's on, in front of me to the right. So she's looking over her shoulder to look at me, and she keeps like staring at me. Like long periods of staring. I'm not talking about just like occasional glances, which people do all the time. Just like, hey, who is that person? Just wander. We all do that. She was flat out staring at me for the first time about 20 to 30 seconds. And at first I was like, maybe she's looking out the window. So then I looked around and I was like, no, there's nothing there. And then we make eye contact and it's so, and I don't know what to do. So I look away. Then she turns away. We get to a stop right before the station. Okay. There's a stop right before the one that basically gets out right in front of the studio. She turns to me at that stop. And at that point it was like 40 seconds and wow. It was just flat out looking at me. And then I was like, oh my God, she knows who I am and she does not like me. She's going to yell at me. There's going to be a scene. It's going to be like Saul Spady at Glow's restaurant in Capitol Hill. This woman's just going to go off on me. And I've never been more uncomfortable in my life. And so we get to this next stop. I'm about to walk off the bus, and she leans over towards me, and she puts her hand out. And I thought she was going to punch me. But it was a handshake because she's a fan.
Oh, wow.
Which is, that happens usually not on the bus. They're not generally the people who listen to the show for whatever reason. You can download the station on the app and listen to us. But she shook my hand and she said, oh, I'm such a big fan. Thank you for what you do. And it was nice. And I got off. Don't do that. Don't do it that way. Say something. You're literally staring at me. Now, I know why she was staring at me at that point, because she was wondering if I was going to get off at the stop right in front of the station. She didn't know if it was me. We're on the radio. You don't see me all that often, except when I'm doing TV, which, by the way, did you know I've been on the Tucker Carlson Show 17 times?
Wow.
And so I'm walking off, and that's when she does it. It freaked me out, and I already feel uncomfortable when I meet fans. It's just a weird feeling. It's a cool feeling at the same time, and you're like, hey, people actually know who I am, and they like me. But stuff like that, man. God, that was so uncomfortable. So uncomfortable.
You should just be, blessed. Say thank you.
No, I said thank you. I was like, oh, thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. And then I walked off.
You have a heart of gold, sir.
Well, I know. That's what I tell everybody. Smartest person in the world. Best looking. I'm the funniest.
And that's why we keep you on radio.
Most interesting. Humble. I'm everything. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. Been listening to the Jason Rancher.